The flash of cameras is blinding, and I want to shield my eyes, but my hands are cuffed behind my back. The cops push me forward like an offering, like something they caught. And the hospital lobby becomes a slow-motion blur of shutters, cell phones, and lurid questions from smiling reporters. Did I know about your vigilante identity? Did you hurt me while I worked for you? Did you ever have sex with me before this morning? This last question draws laughter, as if the answer is obvious. Of course the stalker fucked his maid. Just look at her. As much as their assumption stings, I understand it. I am, after all, dressed in my uniform. Still, despite being given ample time by the police to find decent clothes, actually it took considerable effort for me to find another uniform that fit, since you shredded my last one like gauze, and the dress doesn't quite conceal the handprints you left on my bare legs and arms. Needless to say, the press is enjoying the photo opportunity. I try to hold my chin high as I'm paraded through the sea of gawking faces, but as we cross the lobby, I can't help but shrink a little. Then I see a familiar face, Dr. Keener, waiting for me with a gurney, patting the cushions like a father wanting to have a heart-to-heart. And I feel absolutely tiny. The cops remove the cuffs and lay me down, and Dr. Keener fixes my arms, legs, and chest with safety straps. He speaks over my head, thanking the cops. Then he turns to a reporter who pushes past hospital security. "Yes, I've been abused by the stalker," Dr. Keener confirms for the reporter. "Yes, classic Stockholm syndrome, with perhaps a smattering of hebristophilia, attraction to violent criminals. It's all in his new book," the doctor says, "for sale in the gift shop." I glance toward the lobby gift shop, and there it is, between the stuffed animals and plastic flowers, a stack of books with our picture on the cover, me being carried from a burning building by you, the masked vigilante. The title of Keener's book is pure lurid sleaze. Good Girl for Bad Men. Interviews with a Mask Groupie. If my arms weren't restrained, I'd use Dr. Keener's penknife to probe his testicles. But as things are, I'm forced to endure as he lifts my hair to the side to show the reporter the burn mark on my shoulder. Then the doctor looks down at me. "Are we ready to begin the healing again?" And again, I want to jab his coin pouch with something sharp and permanent. Dr. Keener takes the head of my gurney and wheels me toward the elevators, and the police tag along. We enter one of the cars and the doors cut us off from the buzz of the crowd. I can see Dr. Keener looking at my body in the polished steel door. He takes in my legs, my low-cut top, my breasts. His mouth puckers. "All the work we put in, the breakthroughs we had," Dr. Keener shakes his head, "and you let that criminal do this to you." He fingers my neckline to the side, getting a better view. The police pretend they don't see it, but their eyes dart in the mirrored steel and I catch them grinning. I squeeze my legs together. I squirm lower, trying to get away from him, but Dr. Keener grows bolder. He takes both of my arms, pinning me to the gurney, and leans over me. He locks eyes with me, and I'm both terrified and curious what he thinks he can do with two cops in the elevator. I try to read his intent, but the elevator dings. The doctor releases me, stands upright. The elevator hums to a stop, but the doors don't open. The lights flicker and fade. The power dies. And the backup kicks on, illuminating the elevator panel. One of the cops presses the door open button and they part. I'm pushed into the flickering hallway. The power wavers before it holds steady again, and we hear the elevator shut softly behind us. The men shrug and escort me to the psych ward. Not the critical care unit or an emergency room, but to Dr. Keener's little fiefdom. As we pass the nurse's station, the doctor accepts a paper cup that rattles with pills. He takes a glass of water, approaches me, and I squirm back against the bed. Again, he looks at the cops. "Officers, if you please." To my horror, the cops respond by holding my head in place, and the doctor empties the cup in my mouth. Next, they press the glass to my lips and Keener pours. Half of it goes down my front, soaking my uniform. "Atta girl," the doctor coos. Then he drags my gurney toward one of the private rooms. I roll my tongue around and I spit at the doctor, but he doesn't look back at me, and the police only chuckle. I'm placed in a room without a number, and the nurse is given the name Jane Doe for the chart she hangs on my bed. When I voice my outrage, the doctor pats me on the hand. Then he looks at the cops. "Wait 20 minutes, then you can ask her any questions you want," he tells them. "I'll be back in 40. Dr. Keener looks at my wet clothes and bedraggled hair and says, "Make that 60. What questions?" I ask, voice quivering. But the doctor is gone. The police occupy the visitors' chairs. The cops already asked their questions during the ride over, several times. "I don't know anything about you. I didn't know about your vigilante identity, and they can fuck themselves if they think my answers will change." At least that's what I've resolved to tell them. But I feel the cottony numbness in my mouth and a chill that begins in the back of my skull and moves forward, taking my equilibrium with it. I don't feel so good," I say, holding onto the sides of the gurney. "I need to use the restroom." The hospital lights flicker. Rain pelts the window. My head swims. One of the cops picks up a bedpan and tosses it into my lap. Then he leans back in his chair, trying to see up the hem of my dress. No, I think I'm going to be sick." He nods at the bedpan. This time his partner frowns, not out of moral repulsion, but because he looks nauseated at the thought of watching me retch. So the cop stands, crosses the room, and begins undoing my Velcro straps. He presses his body against my back as he steadies me, walking me toward the corner bathroom, which is large enough for a toilet and a standing shower. Just before he shuts me inside, he winks at me, and I sit heavily on the toilet lid. Finally, alone, I begin to sob. Legally, I don't know what I'm in for. Being fucked against my will on national television isn't a crime, at least not one they can imprison me for. But this psychiatric holding bullshit wasn't something I expected. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to phone a lawyer while I'm up to my gills on meds, when the lights flicker again and finally die. I sit, wavering, and I hear the officer nod. "I'm fine," I tell him. "There's a light above the mirror." He leaves, and I hear a creak in the ceiling panel above me, which is drowned out by the buzz of the emergency lights and the echo of men running through the halls. The ceiling panel shifts aside, and I watch you descend like a shadow. And you're here. standing before me. Your eyes crinkle behind the black domino mask, dancing with laughter, and I can tell you're enjoying this. The hospital, the cops, the manhunt, everything. It's all a game to you. I stand, weaving on my feet. My neck won't support the weight of my head, and I have a hard time focusing on your wry smile. "Oh, my poor girl," you say. "Did they give you something?" I nod, lurch forward. You steady me by grabbing the back of my hair. In my numb, lethargic way, I whisper to you that I was a good girl. I tell you I didn't reveal anything about your nightly excursions. I tell you I was faithful. And you roll your eyes. "Of course you were," you tell me. "And now you're going to show me just how faithful you can be." At first I don't catch your meaning. I mumble drunkenly, repeating myself. "I've been good. I kept your secrets." But then I see you unbuttoning your pants. Something about my panic, or my glassy stupor, has you all worked up. You grip my shoulder and push me down, and my legs crumple under me, bringing my eyes level with your impressive erection. "The cops," I whisper. You nod, taking my lower jaw between your thumb and forefinger, and I realize they're part of it, part of the danger, part of the thrill. Your other hand is still tangled in my hair, and you jerk my head back and whisper, "Try not to make a sound." And you push your cock past my lips, over my tongue, and down my throat, and it might be the strangest sensation I've ever felt. I've taken you in my mouth before, but the drugs make it feel as if your cock is stretching, expanding deep into the pit of my stomach, through me, until it's part of me. My head lulls, my vision fills with sparks, and the floor turns to a bowl under my legs, cupping me against you, and you skewer me like a spoon through an ice cream sundae. You slide your cock into my mouth several times, then I hear you chuckle softly. I realize I've fallen forward, pressing my face into your pelvis while your cock idles, hot and throbbing like an engine in my throat. "Well, that's something," you say. "Maybe we should ask what they gave you." There's laughter in your eyes again, and I hug my arms around your legs as you begin to plunge yourself into me with more force. You use me, my face, like your rag doll, until I finally begin to feel it and I gag and cough. I feel my shoulders lurch, my diaphragm clenches, a telltale pressure boils up in my gut, and I lose control, spewing water and half-digested tablets all over your black boots. "Was that why?" I begin to ask, but you're in my throat again, plunging into me, speeding into me as my body melts against you. I splutter and gag, heaving several more times while you use me for your amusement, for your pleasure. Eventually, when my neck feels like rubber and only your hands locked around my head can keep me upright, I hear you groaning. You yank me forward to grind my cheeks into your pelvis, and I feel you flooding my stomach with hot seed in pulsing, splashing waves. I swallow and cough as I cling to you. I want to stay like this, against you, to bury myself in your warmth like a half-drowned kitten. But someone is knocking. They have been knocking for some time, and I can't remember when it started. It's the cop. He's chuckling, asking if I'm done painting the porcelain. I fight to my feet, shaking but less foggy. For the briefest moment, I feel your hand on my back steadying me. But then I turn, and you're a shadow, disappearing into the ceiling. The panel closes above me just as the bathroom door opens. The cop is standing there, amused by the mess I've made. The power doesn't last. The backups kick on again and again until the diesel runs out and then the evacuation starts. The storm rages against the hospital windows. I'm strapped down, waiting in a fog. That's when Dr. Keener arrives, interrupting the barrage of questions from the cops. The drugs aren't working, the cops complain. They accuse me of vomiting them up on purpose. And the evidence is on the bathroom floor. Dr. Keener clucks his tongue at me like a misbehaving teen. We don't have time for another dose, he says. We have to go, now. The police have lost sight of the vigilante. Besides, it will be safer once I've been transferred to the psychiatric facility uptown, where Dr. Keener has complete, unquestionable domain. Once again, I'm wheeled into the hall and Dr. Keener pats my cheek, telling me it's going to be okay, that he'll take good care of me, that with his help, in his facility, I'll get better, I'll heal, I'll be whole again. He's leaning over me, reassuring me, as my gurney is wheeled into the dark parking garage, and I can't help myself. I reach up as far as the straps will allow, and I grab Dr. Keener's tie. I don't have a plan. That much is clear to both of us, and as the doctor leans back, face turning crimson, the cops encircle us. Before they can do anything, the doctor takes my hand in a crushing grip and forces my fingers apart. You're being very silly, the doctor tells me. Think of all this stalker nonsense as a temporary episode, a momentary break. After this, you'll be normal again. Won't that be nice? Won't that be sweet? Cottony as my mouth is, I'm thinking of trying to spit at him again. But I don't have to, because I see you drop down behind the doctor. So silent and so quick, the cops don't have time to draw their weapons. I try to keep my eyes open, to pick out your form blurring in the dark garage, slamming your elbows and fists into them, dragging them away in the darkness. But I blink, and in that blink, I see Dr. Keener being dragged, screaming, before he is silenced. Then I hear a car trunk slamming, then another as the unconscious police join him. Until finally, the two of us are alone. I'm confused when you don't immediately unstrap my bonds so we can flee. I pull against them, looking up at you. Instead, you take the head of the gurney and you push me toward the ambulance that's waiting, empty, with the doors open. You lift the gurney into the back, then you shut the doors, sealing the two of us inside the tight, dark space. The garage's emergency lights stream through the ambulance window, and I catch glimpses of skin and hard muscle as you strip out of your black, skin-tight stalker suit. And I can't help but lick my lips. You catch me as you turn around. The look you give me is devilish, hungry, and it sends chills down my spine. You lean over me and I smell your musk and something like motor oil or sulfur from wherever you've been hiding. You grip the gurney rails and you grunt, and suddenly I'm floating. You set the gurney on end, feet down, and shove it toward the front of the ambulance, wedging it, and now I'm vertical, standing, strapped to the gurney. A work of art in a frame on display for you. And I squirm. You take your time. You watch me, study me, bound and vulnerable. My head is still stuffed with wool, dazed, and this pleases you. You reach out and begin caressing my body. It starts at my hip, rubbing my skin through the thin uniform fabric. Your touch is surprisingly slow and soft. With the meds making my nerves raw, my skin sensitive, it's almost overwhelming. My breath hitches and you chuckle. Then you get rough. Suddenly you seize my neck, my jaw in your gloved hand, and you kiss me. It's a bruising, dizzying kiss, like you're trying to drink me in. At the same time, your other hand slides down my front, between my breasts, over my stomach, circling lower, lower, until I feel you lift my dress, all while your tongue is exploring my mouth. Then you pull away sharply and I gasp. My dress falls back down. I taste you on my lips, but you break all contact and the air is cold between us. Why? I whisper. As usual, your answer is silent amusement. Hard, dark eyes behind the domino mask and a dry smile. You bend and I feel your fingers crawl up my dress. You pull down my lacy white panties. Then the Velcro rips as you free my ankles. You take my legs and you stand while I'm still pinned to the board by my arms and chest. I gasp as I'm folded in half against the gurney, my legs on your shoulders, and I feel your cock enter me in one steady thrust. I throw my head back, and the air is driven out of me. You lean in, filling me, stretching me, crushing me, and your teeth scrape my neck. As you fuck me senseless against the gurney, my head becomes so foggy it empties of everything except the sensation of you, your smell, your hands, your cock thundering into me, claiming me. I realize in my dizzy euphoria that it was only this morning that you despoiled me on your balcony. It's surprising, then, how my body reacts to you with such craving, such that I can't believe it wasn't eons ago. And I see you're just as greedy for me. It's not my imagination or the drugs. You reach around my legs to grope and cup my breasts. You kiss and peck and bite. You squeeze me, throttle me, as you rock the ambulance, vigorously pounding into me. I reach my climax before you do, but only just. My screams fill the ambulance, and it's as unreserved as it is wanton. My moans spur you on, as do my clenching, quaking shudders, and I feel you come, filling me. You grab the gurney rails and ram yourself deeper as you can, and I feel your cock throbbing as it empties into me. We are both gasping and sweaty in the quiet aftermath. Lightning strikes in the distance, and the lights go dark all across the city. I have 1,000 questions, and I don't know which to ask first. Where will we go? What do we do with a manhunt underway? What am I to you. I assume, wrongly, that we can finally discuss these things once you unbind my wrists. But again, your cruelty knows very few limits. You leave me, dripping, with my dress pinned up around my waist and my arms locked. You crawl into the front of the ambulance and you start the engine. I'm naked from the waist down, staring out the rear window as the dome lights come on. The sirens blare, the strobes flash, and you drive, chuckling, out of the parking structure. My cheeks burn as the ambulance screams down the dark street and people stare through the window to see who's inside.